This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to the Undead Walking Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Now, please welcome your host, Sarah Beth Pollock.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Undead Walking Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Beth Pollock, and this week's episode is going to be very special. I have a very exclusive, very fun interview with Fear the Walking Dead executive producer and director of the season premiere, Michael E. Satrazimus, and we had a very fun conversation about what it took bringing this episode to life and what's going on across the Fear the Walking Dead universe. And there's a little bit of everything in this interview. We talk about the Walking Dead. We talk about, Alicia going behind the camera to direct, working with Coleman in these scenes. There's so much in this interview, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. It really feels like there's a lot going on across the Walking Dead universe right now. And I don't know if you feel this way, but I know we've kind of talked about it on the podcast in the past, but I actually was so confused last week trying to figure out which episode of World Beyond was airing. And I had it right in front of me, but one of the challenges, and we don't talk about screeners anymore publicly, but one of the things that I've noticed, it's not so much about screeners, having access to screeners, because again, the access to screeners is about doing your job, not to, brag about having screeners, but it's supposed to be a tool. And so they send them to you in advance so that you can, do your research and watch the episodes before interviews and get your stuff ready. But what I'm noticing is that between the linear air date on AMC and the episodes being available on AMC Plus a week early and then getting the screeners sometimes 2 weeks early, it makes it really hard to remember what episode is coming. And so last week I was completely convinced that it was supposed to be the second episode of World Beyond. And I had this huge sense of deja vu when I was writing about it. And I realized that I'd already written about it. I'd already done the coverage for that episode and that it was episode 203. It's so weird. And so, yeah, I got caught up in that. And it's something that I feel like the confusion is just going to keep coming. I love having two episodes on. I love having two shows to watch, but it's a little much. It's a little much in the sense that it's hard to keep track of. It's not much because, like, oh my God, Sunday nights are so cool. You have Fear the Walking Dead now, you have World Beyond, and then you have Talking Dead. There's so much to look forward to, but it's a lot to manage. So I just wanted to say that I thought that was really funny because I was so, so confused. And what it all boiled down to is I hadn't watched 203 yet, even though I already had it. And so, it's just funny. Like now I think I have 205. And I already have 204, but I haven't watched 204 or 205 because I'm still processing 203. And so it's a lot. It's a lot to talk about. But it's actually a perfect segue to my conversation with Mikey because we were kind of laughing about that. And we were talking about how they're keeping track of all of these elements in Fear the Walking Dead because now they have to think about things like, the blast zones and where the missiles landed and where the characters are relative to where the blast zones were. And how weather patterns are affecting the levels of radiation in the air. There's so many things to keep track of in this new universe that they've created. And it's really fascinating to hear how those things all come together. Now, this interview is actually going to pair really well with an interview I did. It's going to be a written interview that you'll be able to see over on Hidden Remote that I did with the showrunners, Andrew Chambliss and Ian Goldberg. And they talk about the same thing about how they keep track of all of these things and, the rules that they've created so that they're making sure that they're doing this as authentically as possible. And I think that's a really interesting point because when you think about Fear the Walking Dead and anything in the Walking Dead universe, obviously we don't live in a zombie apocalypse. So zombies are not a real thing, bath salts aside. But we have been through this pandemic, so we understand what it's like to be afraid of a unseen threat that's challenging us and keeping us, kind of locked inside. So there are parallels to real life things. But the thing that's really interesting about the Fear the Walking Dead story that I'm really fascinated by is the fact that we know what nuclear detonations can do, not only because we've used them in a practical sense during World War II, but the testing that went into these things long after World War II. I mean, they used to set these nuclear bombs off in the middle of the Nevada desert, and probably I think in New Mexico too. I mean, there's a history of these things being detonated in the United States and across the world as other countries came into their own nuclear eras. And so there is evidence, and there is research that has been done on what the impact of nuclear fallout is. And so when you watch these scenes, they are steeped in fact, and it's not, it's not fake. I mean, they certainly didn't, they didn't make this up. And I think that's a really important thing. After this week's episode, so after episode 702, I will be premiering an interview that I did with Lenny James and Karen David about this episode. And one of the things that Lenny said that I think is really fascinating is that, he went to Andrew and Ian when they said they had this idea, and he said, "Look, like if we're gonna do this, we need to do it. Like we need to do it to the fullest extent of our ability." And they said, "Don't worry, like we are going to do it." And he said he's just been blown away by the level of realism in these episodes. So, it is something that I think is really important to talk about, because I think as I think one of my pet peeves is that, I was a history major, a history and political science major in college. But I really appreciate history. I appreciate the lessons that we learn from history, and I am a history nerd. So I studied a lot of this stuff. I did all of the recommended reading, I guess you could say. I was that person in school. So if the teacher said, like, here's what you have to read and here's what you should read, I did all of that. And I'm glad for it, because now I have this really interesting insight into these, into these scenarios. And what you see with fear is that they are doing everything they can to make this as real as possible. And so when you see, the way they decontaminate and the way that there are areas that they can breathe and other areas they can't, that's all steeped in fact, because it has to do with the distance from where bombs went off. And so if you have things like Geiger counters, you can tell how, how safe the area is. And so there's all these little things, and I worry that those things are going to be lost, because people will say, "Oh, this isn't realistic," but they won't really know, because they don't really know. I mean, it's you have to kind of know these things. But anyway, I think it's just really impressive how deep into this mythology they're going, and how they're creating this really interesting but really visually stunning new world. I mean, this is the most barren apocalypse you can possibly imagine. And seeing the walkers with their skin, basically everything ripped off. I mean, you don't even know what gender the walkers are anymore. They've become genderless beings because their skin's melted off. And in some cases, I mean, that's what makes them so utterly terrifying, really, is that these walkers are, they suffer the consequences of the fallout, but they're not dead because of it. So they can keep going, and in doing so, they can make an area contaminated because they're bringing the fallout with them. So it's a really interesting way of making the walkers, which have become these, in a lot of ways, they've kind of become the secondary threat in the apocalypse, because, they've gotten used to them after 10 years. But, now, I mean, you have to be really careful. So if you see a walker, I mean, this goes back to, Grace's story in season 5. I mean, you definitely have to be aware of where these walkers have been, because they can bring with them all of the contamination. And if they are in an area where you're trying to catch food, then or find food, then they're going to contaminate everything. So it really changes it changes everything that we know and everything that we've been doing in a really interesting way. So we're going to, my conversation with Mikey, you'll hear all of these things and the things that they're taking into consideration, because I think it's a really fascinating approach to doing something different. Now, obviously, Fear, the season premiere of Fear the Walking Dead, there is an absolute, we cannot go on without talking about Coleman Domingo. I mean, what a performance Coleman Domingo gave in the season premiere. You know, it's funny because, you know, Coleman has been on the show since the beginning, and it's funny to think that a lot of actors will leave shows because they feel like their characters are in a rut and they're doing the same thing over and over, and they want to have some kind of challenge with their roles. And so they look for different roles. And in Coleman's case, he's been blessed by the fact that Strand is the one who changes. And so he's been able to stay in this role and play different variations of the same character, where he starts as a con man and then he, you know, warms up to the idea of having certain people in his circles, and he still doesn't trust other people. And then he double crosses people, and he ends up double crossing people he loves. And then he tries to do the right thing and realizes that's not working. And now he's in this position where he has power, he has authority, he has a life of luxury in the middle of the barren wasteland of the apocalypse. So you have a guy who really he's come full circle, but this may be the most authentic version of himself that we've ever seen. It's hard to tell because he's such a chameleon. He really blends into the background on you know, on so many of these seasons where he goes along with it. But you know, I mean, look back to season four. They were living the life in the ballpark, but Coleman, but Strand still had this, you know, this backup plan. He had supplies that he was sneaking away to make sure that if something went wrong, he would have these supplies. And that really speaks to, you know, to who he is. And so you really see that come out. And I think that's such a fascinating portrayal, and to see Coleman in his element, being able to be this refined gentleman, you know, a gentleman scholar in the middle of all of these works of art that have been preserved for, you know, for all time. But then to also see his, you know, he does obviously care about Alicia because he's still thinking about her, but he's also utterly ruthless. I mean, this is a guy who looked this man in the face and was like, you know, you're gonna have to go. And then, you know, I didn't put this beacon up for her. I put it up as a message to keep her away. And then he throws the guy off the roof and talks to him while he's falling, like the guy's falling to his death, and he's shouting to him like it's no big deal. I mean, it's just so brilliant and so utterly intriguing to think of how Strand has evolved on this journey. Where is it going to go? Is there any sense or chance of redemption for his character? I mean, can he come back from this, or is he the new villain? You know, I think about rumors that Madison was supposed to be the villain, you know, coming out of season three, that was kind of a plan that was in place, and it never made sense to me. Honestly, I never understood why people thought that would be a good idea, or how you would ever see Madison become a dark character, you know, based on who she is. It never really made sense. But Strand is perfect because he can play all of these different roles to the extent that you're talking to him and you think that he's kind of on your side until he throws you off a roof. I mean, he's brilliant. He's a brilliant character, and I think that Coleman Domingo is such the perfect actor to bring him to life because he just leans into everything. Good Strand, bad Strand, con artist Strand, you know, evil Strand, gentleman Strand. The, you know, I can just, I just see him, you know, with these fine, you know, a fine wine and a nice drink, and he's just, you know, he's carrying around a sword because why not? Like, I can have a sword now. I can be this gentleman, you know, living in the apocalypse and ruling over these people and keeping them safe. And I don't know. It's such a cool thing. And I'm really excited about the direction of the season. And so with that, I'm going to jump over to this interview with Mikey, and you'll kind of see, where they're going and hear his thoughts about how this all comes together and how this episode comes together, how it spins out into the larger season 7 arc that's coming. But there's a lot of reason to be excited, and I'm really excited that that you'll have a chance to listen to this interview, because it really gives some really good insight. So here it is, my interview with Michael E. Satrazimus, the executive producer of Fear the Walking Dead and the director of both 701 and 702. And what you'll notice is that we kind of come in on a conversation, and that's because I had to edit out a bunch of stuff that was a little too spoilery, so we couldn't include that. So we're kind of coming in the middle of a conversation, and we were talking about how people try to guess what's going to happen based on photos and things that have been released. And so that's kind of where we're picking up in this conversation.
It's funny, because I was having a conversation with someone yesterday for the podcast. We were talking about how I don't know how much of The Walking Dead 11A you've watched, but the interesting thing is that they had four stories that were kind of moving together throughout the 8 episodes. And we were talking about how the only, like, the most, I don't want to say the most cohesive episode, but the one that had, like, the was kind of the most focused and the most anthology, that had the most anthology feel to it, was the one with Lauren Ridloff, which is just a beautiful episode that Greg Nicotero did. But we were talking about how the anthology format that you guys are doing would have been so cool in with these four stories, because we had to jump around so much, and so it felt like we never got to spend enough time in the Commonwealth or with the Reapers, because each episode kind of bounced around a lot. And I said, that you really, looking at 701, you really see the value of being able to just focus on a story.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Ian Goldberg and Andrew Chambliss, when they decided to move into this kind of format, I think it was really exciting. It allows you to make films, and it allows you to take deep character dives. It allows you to bring other characters, other rich characters in and kill them or keep them or whatever you do with them. But it really, it allows you to peel everything off and isolate somebody. I think I mean, as a filmmaker, it allows you to treat them as films, and you get to complete them and shoot them and have all the elegance and transitions and all, just really kind of craft it. As opposed to a lot of times, if you have an episode where you have five stories and it becomes truncated and choppy, and I mean, it's just it is inherently difficult to kind of keep all those things alive. And I feel like they don't, you don't che I'm not saying you cheapen anything, but it is really hard to keep all of those stories rich when you only get to visit them for a very short time. And this format really lets us just take a deep dive into each character, and I mean, it's very rewarding. I love it.
Yeah. And it really shows the difference between watching, when you, if you take 11A as a whole, as 8 episodes, it works. But episode by episode, this format is just so rewarding. And to allow, because when I think of 701, and 702, but 701 specifically, because that's what we're talking about. But the when I think about that episode, where you were able to go in one episode is just, you wouldn't have been able to do that if you had multiple stories that you had to tell. There was so much richness, and being able to go to these different locations and kind of stay there for a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, if we were doing it in any other format, we wouldn't have been able to open the season on a character that we don't know. And and the great part of doing the life in the day of, it's a nuclear survivor, unknown nuclear survivor, is that we were able to kind of show the entire gamut of the new nuclear apocalypse. I mean, the big deal for 701, and really this whole season, was once that bomb was dropped, we were going to reinvent everything, and from top to bottom. was the goal, you know, wardrobe, the texture of the earth, the color of day, the color of night. We changed everything, you know, keeping the radiation story alive, limited sight distances, the sound design through breathing through masks, you know, and really paint how difficult we thought the apocalypse used to be and how difficult the new apocalypse really is. You know, everyone kind of had it pretty good before those bombs in comparison, you know? So it's the nuclear apocalypse is, you know, is just horrifying in just a day-to-day survival kind of way. And I think having these deep dives, you know, we could really establish the us and the them, you know, being, you know, strand on the proper side of, you know, the grass is truly greener where, where a strand is, and then showing what it's like for an ordinary person to try to survive.
Absolutely. So what were the rules? I mean, this episode just visually is just so stunning because you have all of these different locations and you have all of these elements to it, you know, plus the new look and plus the, you know, the new walkers. There's, you know, there's so many new elements to this.
A lot of nudity this season.
I know, which is, it's so great. That was, when I saw that one walker, I thought this is just the coolest thing ever because you can just do whatever you want and no one's going to know. I mean, it's like the great equalizer with gender, you know, if you get hit by nuclear radiation.
Yes, this
like,
is it. It's the future.
Yeah. You're just kind of a skin bag at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, all those things will unfold. I mean, there was, I think, a lot of things laced into the first episode that will be revealed as we keep going. You know, as far as what we were going to do, those were a lot of discussions we had before the end of last season, before the end of season six, about once that bomb goes off, what we want to paint. And we were even looking into, you know, the LED kind of Mandalorian walls. Just it's very hard to create a nuclear apocalypse in spring in Austin. It's just not the right time, you know. So you know, that wasteland. So you know, we really wanted to talk about changing everything. You know, a lot of things were to get away from green in case we saw it. So we talked about, you know, day being kind of this, you know, orange, and, you know, and then we had to talk, you know, this orange hue, you know, smoky site where you can't see anything. And we had to talk about the zones and separate what we thought, you know, blast zone and then still radiation zone and, you know, kind of intermediate zones, and then talked about the colors and broke them down when we got two new cameramen in, and, you know, went through some tests with them. Definitely wanted to change night from, you know, blue because it just kind of accentuates all the greens. You know, so we've wanted to find you know, kind of these toxic tones to kind of keep the radiation story alive, so it wasn't always a Geiger counter and the sound that was allowing us, you know, I mean, it's a pretty visual medium, so if we always felt that it was possibly in the air. And you know, as soon as you put the gas masks and all this amazing new wardrobe on everybody, it did marry right into that, you know, kind of toxic wasteland. And then it was about finding these large, you know, areas of that we could shoot, you know. And we found some places where they take buildings after they've been wrecking balled and destroyed, and we use them as wasteland. And we got very creative. Our effects department, you know, we upped the game by triple of what they did. None of that is VFX. It is all practical. I mean, it was, you know,
dust
cannons and smoke bombs and all of these things that you can breathe that aren't dangerous. And we would, you know, had a major department, a little army, and they would set these things off and we'd let them spread out and blot out the sun and then shoot. And so it was quite an orchestration to get it done. But it's so rich and so beautiful, and you know, it's just like that kind of haunting.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's funny because, so I was talking with someone yesterday about the new episode of Creepshow that's out, and there's a story in it that's kind of an apocalyptic, plague story. And one of the things that was so striking about it is that the sky is yellow, and that's just, you know, they don't explain why, but it's just to kind of highlight the fact that the world is going, falling apart. And it's so interesting to me, you know, in watching 701 and in watching what you're doing with the season and then thinking of that, it's one of those things kind of like a pandemic, you know, where you don't think of those things becoming real, but, you know, certainly with the fire, the wildfires and, you know, like we've, and pollution and things like now we've seen, like that's actually something that people have encountered and experienced. And it's so, you know, it's one of those things that make these shows and the stories that you're telling, you know, gives them that extra edge because there is that element of realism there, you know, even though it's not nuclear, yeah. But, you know, certainly you can watch footage of what happens when you ignite a nuclear bomb because that yeah. exists.
When Will walks through the forest that's on fire, that was an actual forest fire that had just happened recently, and we were watching it. And once we knew that, you know, no property had been damaged and that nobody had been hurt in trying to put it out, I had all the location team. You know, our guy Logan Cooper, he was like, "Mikey, I can't go out there until they put the fire out." And I was like, "All right, just let me know when they put the fire out." And I was reading articles every day to see, you know, just to make sure nothing horrible had happened. And, but I was, you know, was excited to be able to have that then to shoot in. And obviously because all those trees were charred, we could put fire bars on them and kind of we didn't reignite them, but, you know, put our fire, our safe fire, in it and get them to walk through, which I think, you know, was amazing, you know, but we just kind of lucked into that kind of set piece, you know, like it was a natural devastation that we took a little bit of advantage of in our nuclear apocalypse, you know, which really played out amazing because you just can't get that anywhere. You can't create that.
And to think that you're doing it on this level, you know, you normally you see things like that in a big feature film and, you know, you think of the effects and everything that goes into creating these looks on, you know, like say Dune or something, you know, something on that scale. But what your team has done on this scale to bring it, you know, in a television series is just insane that you can bring that level and bring that realism. And I think that that was something that Lenny said when I talked to Lenny last week. He said that, you know, he went to Andrew and Ian and said, like, if we're going to do this, we have to do it. You know, if we're going to ignite nuclear weapons, like, you know, it needs to look real. And he was like, I was absolutely stunned at the way that turned out. And it's, you know, it's a testament to what the team has done.
Yeah, we just have amazing people. I mean, Frankie Iudica and Scott Rourke are, you know, our effects guys. They have grown into, you know, probably doing a bigger work than anybody is on TV and half the features. You know, it's a product of a successful show that has to keep outdoing itself every season. We have to find ways to raise the bar. And I think, you know, a nuclear apocalypse is a really great opportunity. I mean, that gave us an opportunity on top to bottom to, you know, rewrite the apocalypse. If you look what, you know, Zaretta Schultz, our costume designer, did this season with all the different groups and the radiation and, you know, and Colin Thurston, our prop master, you know, the masks and everything, really, you know, dedicating to making this tight, you know, if we're going to go into this nuclear survival kind of area, you've got to buy into it 100% in every department, top to bottom. I think everybody, you know, everyone took the challenge. It was very tough to do this, you know, I mean, to do our normal shows, very tough to try to reinvent and on this level where we really upped the scale. You know, we always shoot big and wide and try to paint the apocalypse within every corner of frame. But I think this season, you know, like we went nuclear apocalypse in every corner of frame. And that was an amazing amount of work. I mean, you know, Bernardo Trujillo, our production designer, if you look underneath that bridge, like some of those set pieces, it's stunning. They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's images that we shot that I want as big in 2x3s framed in my house. I just haven't gotten around to it because we still not stop working. But one day.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And I think what's so interesting is the contrast, you know, particularly in the season premiere, of, you know, this vast nuclear wasteland. And then you go in and Strand has this oasis that's full of just the, you know, the priceless treasures. And I can only imagine the props people coming up with this, you know, I mean, just being able to find these things, because it just, it's so over the top, but so perfectly Strand that he ended up in that, you know, in that warehouse with Howard, just, you know, chilling with the finest of things.
And I think, well, I think for him, that's the perfect setting, you know, to build a new Strand. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think if I watched a nuclear bomb go off and then realized I was the last man standing in a fortress building with all of those goods, I'd probably think I was, you know, the new chosen one, you know, and you know, I think it, you know, it's probably a reinvention of the character. I think mm-hmm. it's, you know, it is.
Yeah.
And we'll see where it goes.
I think it must be fun.
702 was the cool thing about that was that was like our night exploration. You know, we had, you know, just even in change of style, you know, 702 gave us those weird toxic nights.
Right.
I think that was, you know, that was fun to do.
And because it really does, it feels like each, you know, I mean, I've only seen the two, but the shift, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you know, that you had to consider the blast pattern and, you know, what's going on in different areas. So even within the season, there are different, you know, different elements of, you know, where the apocalypse hit harder and where you have to, you know, and how that changes the look, which makes it, you know, like a completely different show from week to week, just because you have to think of those things.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we, at the very beginning of the season, you know, 9 of the 10 warheads went off, so we tried to map out where we thought they landed, the blast zones, you know, then the multiple radiation zones that would echo out from there, where they overlapped, and, you know, and tried to just for us as creators, so that we could kind of pin down where things were and where people were and where blast zones would be and where there might be a safe zone and things like that. And it that one alone took a while to kind of, you know, figure it out, and then really define. It was important to define all of those places, and you know, by look, by, you know, mask on, mask off, by, you know, because some irradiated areas, you know, not necessarily are hot, just because it depends on the particles and depends on the way the wind shifted. And you know, that's why you can check with the Geiger counter and take your mask off, you know, in some places that it's not, you know, and then there's some places every step you take, you know, you're acquiring things and you're going to need to, you know, to set up a, you know, an area to kind of take out all your outer layers and, you know, and have them sterilized or cleaned and reset so that you can keep doing it, you know. And I think it, you know, it was neat math, but it didn't require a lot of thinking. It's a lot extra work and good, but you know, but very enriching to the story.
Oh yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm thinking I have an early copy of the Art of the Walking Dead universe that's coming out, and it's a beautiful book.
It is,
but I have to hope that these notes and these maps and things make it into the next book, because these are the kinds of things that, as a fan, I would love to see how you came up, you know, like what that even looks like, because I mean, those are, it's like the I think there was a drawing in the production office when we were there a couple of years ago, like of the ballpark and these renderings, and you think of these, you know, how these things came to life, and you know, how you took a normal ballpark and made it into this little community. I mean, these are the things that are just, you know, in the locations you've been able to work with and how you've been able to transform them. That's like a whole, you know, whole side of the show that just makes it so special.
Yeah, I mean, the renderings are particularly beautiful. I mean, we have, you know, the maps of where the blasts go, look, those start looking like diaries of a madman. It looks a little bit more like we're all insane for a minute. we can't draw and we've scratched out over everything, and you know, it starts looking like we're, you know, totally insane. But you know, you have to do that and we have to have a consensus. And, you know, because we're kind of this all together, we're this one organism, this filmmaking organism, we really need to define those things, because at some point in time, everyone has to split and run in separate directions. And you know, if you're going to reinvent the show, if you're going to create a nuclear apocalypse, you need to define it in every iteration with all the rules in every space and every set, and then break it down per script and then go through that with everybody. And it was, you know, it's very important to do that, you know, at the beginning of the season. And then everyone, when they run, we've kind of got it, you know. And,
yeah.
And obviously we've got to keep checking back in, you know, with each other, and, you know, but it was a lot of kind of front load. What are we going to do? What is this going to represent? How's it going to look? You know, and then getting back on the phone with Ian and Andrew and, you know, going through all our definitions, what we thought we could do and accomplish. I did not think that we would probably have accomplished as well as we did. I was nervous about doing a practical nuclear apocalypse, because, you know, when you talk about blotting out the sun with smoke and dust and yeah, like that, you know, you think of like, what about wind and what about, you know, this, that. We were just super blessed and really, you know, with a lot of talent and a lot of support. You know, Frank Hildebrand is immensely supportive of all the creative and somehow finds a way to get it done. And was, you know, it was a major effort, you know, but pretty amazing.
And to think that you brought it all together in, you know, in an apocalypse, you know, in itself, in the middle of, you know, the pandemic with COVID rules and restrictions. And, you know, that says so much about, you know, again, about your team and just the ability, because every person I've talked to has said that they've never felt safer on a set than on Fear. I mean, they do, you know, and within the Walking Dead universe, because everything is so, so careful. But knowing how many people it takes to bring these things to life, and to, you know, it takes so many people from the makeup to the, you know, to wardrobe, to props, to, you know, there's so many different elements, and that you could do that and still bring this level, you know, this level of television to life in the middle of all of that is incredibly impressive.
Yeah. I mean, look, the last year and a half has been pressing on everybody, mm-hmm. you know, the whole world, and you know, and we're not immune from any of that. We kind of, you know, finished one season, ramped up into the next season, which is this season 7, and made it much more difficult to do just inherently by, you know, by the kind of execution. But to execute on this level, you need everybody to really truly care, to be beyond talented, you know, but like really put their heart into it. And I think this is, it's a testament, you know. I mean, everyone's been in a vice for forever with COVID it's just seemingly a hamster wheel, thinking that, you know, it's going to be over, and it's not. And, you know, but we've been creating together, and to see everybody execute on this level and care this much, it's the only way what we're getting done now could be accomplished. And, you know, it's, I come into work and every day I am immensely thankful to the people that I get to create with. I couldn't do anything. I would just be like a weird dreamer sitting around in a room without everybody. And to, you know, to see things grow outside of my imagination, to get larger, knowing I have a very big imagination, is always really, really exciting. And the kind of execution that everybody has done, like, I mean, if I could just go down a list and say all the names, I mean, I've got a list of, you know, 70 people that you know, that are so important to the success of this. And, you know, it's, I mean, it really is an example of what you can do together if everybody is really cares a lot and is super talented.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's it like, having been with the show for so long, what's it like seeing this other side of Strand? Because that's, I mean, Coleman is just phenomenal, but this role, I feel, is so, I mean, you think of actors taking on different projects so they can experience different types of characters. But Coleman has been able to experience about six different characters within the one character in this series. And now to see him the complete opposite of, you know, where he was in season five. I mean, he kills it. And I just love, I can't imagine what that must have been like seeing that transition as you're bringing that episode to life.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Coleman Domingo is a beast. He brings the truth, and he brings the truth in a very special and unique way. And when he's on point, when he's fired up, when he's locked in, he is something special. You know, I mean, the director, you're kind of an emotional thief. You get these free, amazing, beautiful emotions and experiences. You don't have to wear the scar or any of the pain of any of it. And you know, getting to you know, direct 616 with Coleman, and you know, which we spoke a lot about, you know, it being the epicenter of what was to come, of the new character that was going to come, that Adam splitting was also splitting inside of him. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that he was, you know, going to evolve in, and then getting to direct 701 and ride through that with him. I it's been one of the most rewarding experiences, this last little run with Coleman. I love working with him. I love, you know, saying two words and watching, you know, him echo out. I love him taking risks and the chances, you know, that he takes. He's a bold filmmaker. You know, he is trusting and nurturing. You know, it's amazing. And then when you wind him up and let him go, man, he's truly something special. And you know, just him and Gus together, Gus Halper plays Will. That was also something just truly, truly special. So I'm super excited, you know.
I mean, it's been
amazing.
When I think of the talent that this cast has, but also knowing, you know, to think, Coleman was the first actor to go behind the camera who's, you know, currently starring in the series. And then Lenny followed, and now Alicia's followed. I mean, that's just, it's, that must feel, I mean, as someone who's been doing this for so long on the show, to see the actors now coming behind the camera, that must be really special.
It is special. I mean, to have any of them direct, I have a personal relationship with everybody. We, you know, we get vulnerable together, you know, and run a lot of people stripped down to all of our emotions and trust each other. So I have these experiences with all three of them that are, you know, they are personal, and they become personal, and they become something really important to me that we've done and created together. And creation is kind of, you know, one of the most important things in my life, at least. And to see them kind of get re-inspired, you know, to create to be their 10-year-old self wiggling around with pure joy and excitement, to watch them grow as filmmakers, you know, and really put all themselves into it, you know, even start things that they're initially weak in, they're gaining strength in, you know, I mean, it's fun. I don't go to set to help them, and I go to set to just watch them. Mm-hmm. You know, I rarely watch the shooting. I watch during the take and listen to it, but I kind of just watch them. It's just so neat to see people that you love get super excited and re-inspired, and they're doing so well. You know, I mean, I spend all of prep with them, because I think prep is where you shape everything, and then you let them run. And you know, they all have set experience, so inherently they're there. Courtney, am I allowed to talk about Alicia?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, Alicia's, she's directing.
Yeah, okay. Alicia is doing amazing. She wants it. She has a beast inside her as well. I think when she's done, she's going to want more of it. And mm-hmm. She's really doing fantastic. It's neat. I've been given every opportunity, you know, from others, and I can only thank them by doing the same thing to other people. And it's really rewarding when people that you already have a relationship with, take it and kind of start succeeding.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the magical things about this universe is that there is that kind of camaraderie behind the camera. I mean, now you have Michael Cudlitz, who's been kind of, he's been on World Beyond and The Walking Dead, and Aisha Tyler is directing, World Beyond, and then she's going to be on Fear, and she's been a huge fan, and knowing that there are these opportunities to kind of grow within the universe, if it's not necessarily on your own show or while you're on your own show, it's a really interesting dynamic, because that's one of my favorite memories of that set visit was seeing Lenny directing Coleman and Alicia, and watching. Because I feel like there is that slight difference of having a peer, a fellow actor behind the camera, as opposed to a director specifically. And it's you can see it. And I feel like it lends something so special to those scenes.
Well, I think it is. I mean, listen, like Cudlitz, he's been a filmmaker forever. I mean, I knew that his first day on set on The Other Side. We were talking about shots and cuts and things like that. I think, we all get kind of sharpened as filmmakers in one way or the other and gain strengths just from, putting the time in. I think when it's on your own set, especially as an actor with the other actors, you've already done really hard, vulnerable scenes. I mean, you've really already had to lean into trusting them and giving all of your emotions to back at them. You've already done this personal kind of dance. So when they slip into the directing slot, there's this trust that already inherently exists and a comfortability that, that already exists. So it is more often than not all been successful and always on honor shows. It has been super successful. I think, the downside for them is they all are starting to like it. And I think, and they realize the amount of work that it is, And,
yeah.
But once the hook's set, you can't back out. You just keep wanting to do it, I think all of them are going to want to continue directing because they've all done a fantastic job.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And I have to think that, as someone who's been with the franchise so long, what's it like for you seeing that some of the most amazing storytelling coming out of this universe, with The Walking Dead, some of the most incredible stories have been, season 10, season 9, season 10, season 11, with Fear, it's in its seventh season, which blows my mind to think of how far it's come. And yet the stories just continue to get better and better. And as someone who was there in the very beginning of this universe, the big bang moment, I guess you were there for the big bang back in 2010, and now you're here. I mean, what does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, first off, I didn't think that either. I didn't think anything has the kind of legs to keep amazing stories going for this long, outside of this universe anywhere. I didn't think so. And I would have left a long time ago had the stories not been consistently amazing and great. It has always been, a family thing for me. I mean, growing up on the other side with the Big Bang, I remember when we didn't matter, or nobody had told us that we mattered. We thought we did, but it was long before anyone said, "This is so great. You guys are amazing." That's one of my fondest memories, of that time, because we were all just doing it and believed in something that, hadn't already been verified. So it is very family. It is the epicenter of a lot of my success and opportunities. But I would have left if the stories, hadn't been so good. It's surprising to me. I mean, just in general, I think it's, it's just a testament to the wealth of talent, of writing talent, from showrunning talent, from from all of these creators, because, you know, just consistently, I keep getting very excited about the scripts, you know, even that I don't get to direct. I'm like, I get a little jealous. Like, damn it, I wish I had that one too. You know, I can only do so many. But secretly, I want to direct them all. Yeah. It's not a secret anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think I can't blame you, because every single story has just been so phenomenal. So it's, and it's funny too, because I'm thinking of, you know, that the premiere is this Sunday, but people have already seen it because, you know, if they have AMC Plus. And so I've just been hearing so many people have commented and said, oh my God, like, I can't believe it. Like, it's so much better than I, you know, it's either blown their minds, or it's better than they ever could have imagined, because you can't really envision how that was going to come together. And so the feedback's just been insane, because everybody's just, it's like, they can't believe you actually did what you did, but you did it.
Well, yeah, listen, at the very beginning, when I had called and confirmed for the 19th time that those bombs were really going to go off and that we were going to continue shooting after it. I wasn't sure how we were going to do it. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a very big task. It seems like an impossible task, I think, to try to create a nuclear apocalypse at the scale that, you know, that we're doing, and practically, you know. So what I liked about that was that we figured that nobody would assume that everyone would just assume we would let go of it pretty early, or they would just move to a safe spot and not hold on to it. So I think that's probably what's surprising, is just that common sense doesn't allow you to think that on a television show you can represent a nuclear apocalypse at the level and scale that we're, you know, able to do it, you know. But it's a testament to the crew and you know, and the immensely talented people that we have, you know what I mean. So and like I said, it was still a pleasant surprise to me, even as much as I don't like to have any doubt creep inside, you know, so I always go for it. You know, it's hard not to have to consider that maybe we weren't gonna do as well as we did. But we did. So I'm glad they're surprised. I haven't read anything, but that it's nice to hear.
Yeah,
it's resonating with people.
Oh, it absolutely is, and I can't wait until Sunday when it's out in the world completely. But I know we're running on time, so I just want to make sure I have one last question, because we never really get to talk at this time of year. Like, usually fear is in a different time frame, but given that Halloween's coming up, any hint on what the Satrazimus family will be dressing up as this year? I don't know why that strikes me as an interesting question. I wonder what happens when you have
well, when you have a four-year-old, well, he will be five 2 days before Halloween. He's kind of choosing things right now. So I think mommy gets to be a princess unicorn, I think is what he said. I think I'm stuck with Luigi, because he wants to be Mario. So we'll see, you know, we're not trying to get overly inventive. We're letting him kind of guide the way, you know. But I don't mind staying away from total death, and, you know, like, I don't need to wear the skin of a walker over my face. I do that every day for work, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. I love it.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, we never get to talk at this point, at this time. So it's always, I figured, might as well.
We got the October slot, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully that, you know, working through the summer in Austin, if it gave us the October slot, I guess that's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a great time to be on, and, you know, what a time for the apocalypse. So.
Yeah. What are you doing for Halloween?
I haven't decided yet. I think, so I've been doing the house, getting the house ready. So more than dressing up, I think I'm more into how do I scare people, and how do I figure out how to come up with something to get them up the walkway and then scare them from behind.
Oh, that
so that's what
fun.
I'm kind of, yeah.
That's what people need.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. You could be COVID virus and just jump out at them.
That's true. I could drop something that's my mom used to do. My mom was huge into scaring people. And one year she had this giant 6-foot spider, and she had my dad connected to a fishing reel, and he was up in like upstairs, you know, and took out the window so that he could, you know, be up in the window, like lowering the spider. And it was great. And the effect was great. But what was more fun were all the dads trying to figure out how it worked. And you know, it must be a sensor. It must be on.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome. Yeah.
The most practical thing you could possibly do. And we were dying laughing because it was like, we couldn't even hold it together because they were so convinced that it was like some high tech thing. And I'm like, it's not a fishing pole. Yeah. Like it's,
it's dad talk.
So, but thank you so much for taking the time. I always love chatting with you and God, I'm so excited about the season.
Yeah, of course. I mean, thank you. Yeah, I love talking with you anyway. I mean, it's a really good season. You know, it feels very big. I mean, reinventing the apocalypse is a big deal.
Yeah.
I hope everybody it resonates with them on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cause it's a big one, and you're doing amazing things. So it's so much fun to see and so much fun to think of what's coming. Cause it's like, you see two episodes and it's like, if this is as big as this, you know, as big as these episodes are, you can't wait to see what's coming up later.
it does keep coming. All right, I'm going to go tell everybody that you said great things.
Oh, please do. Cause and honestly, like I will name names. Like I want to put all the, you know, I love that everybody get to give shout outs to people. So they will all be featured. And
oh, cool. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
I think that's important.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a lot of hard work, and a lot of them don't even get to see all the finished episodes, you know, as we create them, you know, and you know, I think it's important to feel a little bit of love, that amount of work. So I'm going to race out of my office and go tell them all.
All right. Well, Mikey, it's been a pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Sarah Beth.
Yeah, all right, anytime. Thank you.
Okay, hopefully you enjoyed that interview. I really had a great time talking with him, and he's such a nice guy, and he's so, I think what it is about Mikey, the thing about Mikey that I love is his enthusiasm is so genuine and so inspiring. I mean, this is someone who's been with the show since the beginning. He was, you know, he worked on The Walking Dead before he was before he directed. I mean, he was, you know, working cameras, and you know, he really grew on The Walking Dead and became someone who was, you know, is such an integral part of the Walking Dead universe. So you know, having him on Fear is just so amazing. And, you know, obviously we know he's behind some of the biggest episodes of The Walking Dead also. So, you know, so his perspective counts a lot, and to hear his enthusiasm for this season, it just pumps me up. It gets me so excited because I just know it's going to be a fantastic season. So, with that, I just kind of want to tie up the loose ends. There are a lot of there's a lot of really good content out there, and I have to remember to share it because I'm really bad at, sometimes I get like, I've done interviews, it's been so long since I did the interview that when it comes out I kind of forget about it because I feel like it's been months and months. So there's a lot of stuff coming out and stuff that is that's already out. So you can definitely check out my interview this week. There's an interview already out with Nicholas Cantu from Walking Dead World Beyond. There will be an interview coming out with Andrew and Ian about the season premiere. And there will be some follow-up comments from them next week because we also talked about 702. So we'll be talking about that next week. And then I'll also have my interview with Lenny and Karen, and that's coming out after Sunday's episode. So there is a ton of stuff. And I think there's more World Beyond interviews coming too. Like I said, it's hard to keep track. It is so hard to keep track, but all I know is, oh my gosh, before I even forget, there's also an interview that I have coming up with Mike Zagari, who is the AMC Publishing Vice President, and he handles all of the everything that's going on. He's the man behind the art of the Walking Dead universe book that's coming out soon. That was delayed a little bit, so if you notice, like, you should be, if you were supposed to get it right now, it's probably going to be another couple weeks, because I think it's coming out early November now. But the book is gorgeous, and Mike and I had a chance to talk about it, and I just love his enthusiasm for this project. So there is so much to look forward to in the Walking Dead universe, and I can't wait to go along on the ride with you with it. So thank you. If you've made it this far in the podcast, thank you. As always, please make sure you you know, leave a comment, suggestion, review. Love to see all of it. Make sure you subscribe and like the podcast, just so that we can keep doing this, because I enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it too. If you have any questions, or if you want me to talk about things on the podcast, hit me up at Sarah Beth Pollock on Twitter. And yeah, I think that's a good place to stop. So as always, I just want to remind you guys to stay safe, wash your hands, and watch out for those walkers. Thanks, everybody.